Welcome to another edition of our unique NUFC podcast. It's Internationals weekend, so we thought we'd look at some famous names who pulled on the black and white and earned those magical international caps. Welcome to an international black and white with Arab News. Who better than to regale memories of former Toon players at country level and revered sports author and leading journo John Richardson. But before we meet them, it's time to welcome back our own podcast international mascot, Ali Khaled. AK, before we start, last weekend saw another draw at St James's Park, although the Toons still sit nicely in 10th.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, another good performance. Plenty of chances, you know, they could have won it. Gives me no pleasure, Pete, to repeat what I've been saying every week this season. Yeah. That, you know, those draws could have been turned into wins with, you know, contributions, goal contributions elsewhere. We brought that up last week. I've brought it up every week since the season started, because Newcastle are playing really well, good performances. This was another game that they should be winning, you know. And I know they hit the post, and I know they played. They had some good chances and all that. No criticism of one particular player. I just keep thinking, you know, the midfield and maybe the wide players should have a little bit more goal contributions, which will turn those draws into wins. I feel like draws into wins is becoming our slogan, Pete. You know, we've said it so many times. But yeah, I mean, I think it's been a good start to the season. Even the one defeat, could, you know, was seconds away from being a draw as well against Liverpool. So, you know, just I wouldn't say it's, you know, a time to panic or anything, but slightly concerning that it's only been one win.
Let's bring in a voice of reason. Rico, before we get into international matters, let's talk about that at Newcastle. It's not a major concern, as Ali says, but it's slightly concerning because they say they've only been beaten once, but then you look at the other side of the coin and it's one win and seven.
I can't believe it, though. We're frustrated and they're sitting in 10th place. I mean, yeah. This time last season, we'd have settled for that. And it's now the high expectation of everybody, and that's good. I do think it shows that we can't do without Callum Wilson and Alan Saint-Maximin. They are vital to the side. Also, Jonjo Shelvey's missing, of course. And I think now you can see why Eddie Howe wanted more players in during the transfer window. He was desperate to get Jack Harrison in from Leeds. And I think somebody like Jack, who I think is a tremendous player, seen a lot of him, you know, close up, I think somebody like that could make a difference in these times, you know, when you're looking for somebody to open up defences, and somebody like that can help you. Obviously, Alan Saint-Maximin does it, but the pity is he's injury prone, and so is Callum Wilson. You know, that is the pity. I mean, Callum Wilson would be absurd to go to Qatar, I'd have thought, if he was fully fit, but England won't risk him because of his injuries. But yeah, it's a little bit frustrating, but at the same time, you know, you're not looking at the bottom of the table anymore, are you?
No.
You know, we're looking towards the top. And, you know, the fact, you know, a lot of people think, oh, they're going to get into Europe. They might do, but that is still a little way ahead yet. So I think we've all got to calm down and you know, be satisfied. I agree with Ali. I think some points have been missed. You know, you'd expect to beat Crystal Palace, expect to beat Bournemouth. So I think we're about 4 points down on what, you know, we would ideally be for the football we've played this season. But, you know, so far so good. And everybody loves Eddie Howe, don't they? So, you know, let's continue to back him.
The ethos is going well. Everything looks rosy. I think it shows how hard the transfer market is, John, when Newcastle have spent, they're up there with the top spenders. Yeah. But then you take out a couple of key players that you've mentioned, the three there, Shelvey, Wilson and Allen. Yeah. You take them out and you replace them with all due respect to players who really love wearing the black and white shirt. But that when you go from that to the players that come in to fill them, you can see how difficult the task it is to have a squad full of them.
Also, my biggest worry is an injury to Nick Pope. You know, he's been superb. I remember in the summer, let you into a little secret, somebody was saying, oh, Newcastle are going to sign Dean Henderson. I said, oh, no, I've seen a bit of Dean Henderson. And I said to this person within Newcastle, I said, what about Nick Pope at Burnley? I'm not saying that I got him to Newcastle, but I did mention it. I said, look, I've seen him, you know, not week in, week out, but I've seen Burnley quite a lot. And he's outstanding. You know, he makes sensational saves. So I don't know if that registered, but I was delighted that he went there. Now the worry is, of course, with Prava going to Manchester United, Karius has come in, and I'm a little bit worried if Nick Pope gets an injury. I think that could impact on Newcastle, you know, greatly.
So strengthening needed, definitely. And of course, there's always the worry that the better players you have, they go on international duty as well. And let's see what happens there, which brings me into that, Ali. Listen, Newcastle have got a long line of famed internationals. So we've got a quiz question for you, AK. He's been bothering me, John, to ask him and get some quizzes going. So I thought, okay, I'll give you a quiz.
as long as you leave me out of it.
So just have a think on them both. And both of you, and give me an answer at the end, I'll remind you. So the question is this. An easy ask is which former Toon star has the most England caps? We know that's the line of Gosforth. But who's the second most capped player for England that's featured at Newcastle? Have a think on that, and then let me know at the end of the episode.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's a good one. So you've got your wish. John, as mentioned, many famed Toon legends have won the Three Lions, but one that stands out for me still, and I was speaking to my dad about it as well, a guest of this show just recently was Supermac. Five goals in one game against Cyprus, in a game that I've watched back, he probably could have scored 9 or 10 in that match.
Four of them were headers, weren't they? Four of the five were headers. And also, he was in the team, you know, Don Revie was the manager, and as you know, Don Revie didn't want him in the team.
No,
you know, because there was this sort of, animosity between the two of them. And he played, hadn't he, in the game against West Germany before, scored, and Don Revie refused to shake his hand. And he told him, you're only in the side because of the media. You know, obviously, people in the Northeast, like John Gibson, were rightly pressing their, you know, Supermax claims for an England spot. So he reluctantly took him into the squad. And even evidently, according to Supermac, I don't know if he told you, but after those five goals, he wasn't congratulated. And he never played at Wembley again for England.
And also, as well, just before I come to Ali, literally, Supermac says that the media asked Revie after the game about Supermac, and he went, yeah, he did all right. He did all right. Ali, a certain Kevin Keegan played in that game as well, linked up nicely with Supermac for a couple. So all our yesterdays there in that match.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Keegan for me was like one of my first heroes. Obviously, I've said, as everyone knows, anyone who listens to the podcast knows, I support Liverpool. So, you know, my introduction to English football was like really at the time in Kevin Keegan's last season. Which was last season at Liverpool, which was 76-77. So, and, you know, living in Abu Dhabi at the time, you know, we didn't get that much football. You know, we'd get like recorded highlights and all that. So like Kevin Keegan was my hero. He's the one that sort of made me support Liverpool. But we would also get the England-Scotland game live. You know, we would get, John, we would get like three live games a season. And I realized even in England at the time, there weren't that much live football, you know, but we would get the European Cup final, we would get the England-Scotland game and the FA Cup, you know, and that season, 77, obviously Liverpool won the European Cup final. Keegan was man of the match in his last match for Liverpool, but I'd always watch him in the England-Scotland games, you know, and in those late 70s, you know, he was heavily involved in those games. I remember Steve Coppell scoring in like three consecutive ones. You know, like those games stand out, you know, like sort of like my introduction to international football. So Kevin Keegan was a hero of mine. And like whenever I think of those days of like England internationals, you know, he was the man. Him and Trevor Brooking were like the ones that always stood out for me.
You mentioned 1977, Ali. I was at Wembley that day, show my age now. I think I was the only Englishman there, you know, when Scotland won 2-1 and took the goalpost home with them.
That's right.
You know, I actually went with some Scottish mates, although I don't admit to having Scottish mates, but, you know, that they were. I was working in Brighton at the time and we went to Wembley and I thought, where's the English supporters? It was just full of jocks running wild.
Did Kenny score? Did Dalglish score in that game? I think Dalglish scored, didn't he?
It was 2-1 to Scotland. Can't remember, but we got our revenge, didn't we? Was it season after or a couple of seasons later? Beat them 5-1 at Wembley. Remember, Kevin played brilliantly in that game. I think Jerry Francis played well in that 5-1. There's nothing better than beating Scotland.
Yeah, I've got like strong memories of those games. Yeah, back then.
It's a funny one as well, because when you look at it, Newcastle fans were up in arms with a certain Sir Bobby Robson closer to 80, because he was the one that stopped Kevin Keegan. He called time on his England career as well, didn't he?
That's right. I remember I was on the Newcastle Journal at the time, and we were all chasing Kevin because we'd heard that. And I think it was the famous quote, wasn't it, that I think Kevin said, oh, he couldn't even bother phoning me. It would have cost sixpence or something in old money, you know, to ring him. And, you know, it wasn't the fact that he was left out. It was the fact that he learnt about it in the newspapers. I think John Gibson broke the story in the Evening Chronicle, because it, you know, it came out that morning. And after that, we were all chasing, and that left a sour taste in many Newcastle fans' mouths, you know. And I remember Bobby, it was then Bobby, wasn't it, who came to St. James's Park as England manager to watch a game, and, you know, he got a bit of abuse. All was forgiven later, of course, when he became manager. So
football's a funny old game, someone once said, I remember. John, a man close to you as well, who only went on to feature for the Three Lions after Newcastle, but I couldn't have a podcast without mentioning him. Paul Gascoigne, do you think that humbling of Hendry and his slick finish at Euro 96 was his greatest England moment?
Absolutely. It's iconic, isn't it? The celebration was absolutely brilliant, pure Gazza. You know, the dentist chair celebration after all the problems that preceded the game. You know, they were caught out with the Hong Kong. A few drinks were had. And, it's fantastic. You know, I mean, he actually should have played more times for England. I think was it 50? I'm not sure, more than 50 caps. But he should have played even more. And Italia 90 was obviously the standout. It certainly was for me, because I don't know if I told you the story, Pete, I might be repeating myself, but I was on the Sun at the time doing his column, as you know, as his columnist, but I wasn't accredited for Italia 90. He said, why not? I said, well, I can't go. Alex Montgomery is the number one on the Sun. He will do your column for you. He's a fantastic bloke. You won't have any problems with him. Anyway, they go off to Sardinia, where they were based, and they get a call from the sports editor to say, oh, he says, you'll have to get out there. Gaz has refused to speak to Alex. Oh, right. So those times you could get accredited pretty well straight away. So get out there, and there were no real mobile phones at the time. So I had to get him to speak to him at the hotel, team hotel. And he says, right, he says, so the problem is, Gazza, I can't get to the hotel because the press aren't allowed in except on certain days, and I've got to do this column every day. He said, don't worry, he says, there's a golf course just outside the hotel. Turn up by there and I'll meet you. So next thing you know, I turn up and this golf buggy starts coming towards me with Chris Waddle and Paul Gascoigne and a load of, golf bags. He says, get in. So he smuggled me in this golf buggy into the hotel to do his column. Absolutely. That was Gazza.
It is so Gazza, isn't it? And Ali, I'll stay with Gazza, because I've got to ask you, do you think, and I've been reading up on this, and it's interesting what certain people's points of view that they have on it, but, you know, following on from what John said there, Gazza probably didn't play enough for England. Would you say that it was the biggest error of not taking Paul Gascoigne to the 98 finals from Hoddle?
I don't know. I mean, like, in hindsight, I think, you know, with the passing of time, that might seem so. But I do remember at the time he was not in great form. And I think that, I mean, there was issues clearly between him and Hoddle, and I remember at the time as well, looking at the midfield, like, Jamie Redknapp was in, he got injured. I know David Batty obviously was in, and like a few others. And you would think Gazza was definitely the most talented one of that midfield, because, you know, they had people like Paul Ince and David Batty. And Jamie Redknapp, who was a good passer of the ball and all that, he got injured. But I think Gazza was easily probably the most gifted of those midfielders back then, but he wasn't in good form. I mean, I do remember that as well. And I think there had been issues as well. And while it was, as, somewhat of a surprise. I still remember at the time thinking, well, this is not a huge shock, because he had not been in good form. And obviously he had his injury problems, and, he'd been, but at that point, I think he'd moved to Middlesbrough. So I think in hindsight, you think like maybe Gazza was the missing link in 98. But yeah, but I still think he wasn't on top form, and he had had his injury problems.
The thing with that is, John, though, everyone would say that, all players like that, Mercurial, they come with their baggage. He couldn't change the game at any given time, couldn't he?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Glenn Hoddle obviously didn't trust him, did he? He certainly didn't trust him in the hotel room, which he got wrecked when he informed him he wasn't in the final squad. A lot of managers don't trust Maverick players. I've had this discussion before. When you look at the Alan Hudsons, the Tony Currys, people like that, this world, and you see how many caps they've got. It's amazing, but you have to have this trust, I suppose. But I'm a romantic. I love players that can do things like Gazza. And if you have to put up with the baggage, you have to put up with the baggage, because you've got a special quality there. I've just looked it up. It's 57 caps. Now, somebody like Paul Gascoigne, who was probably the greatest player of his generation, should have had 100 caps for everything that he portrayed.
Absolutely. Staying with you, John, one of the finest partnerships in England history is that of Gary Lineker and Peter Beardsley. I can still recall Beardsley making his England debut. It was a friendly against Egypt in Cairo 36 years ago, by the way. 36 years. And now I'll be accused of saying that it's Newcastle bias here by any England fan who doesn't happen to be a Newcastle fan. But do you think I'm fair in saying that Beardsley possibly contributed to Lineker being so successful? I know he did with Andy Cole being at Newcastle.
Well, I remember doing a podcast with Gary Lineker about 6 months ago and asked him who was your best partner. And he said Peter Beardsley, without a doubt. He said Peter, was unselfish. He'd run his socks off, as we know. What I always remember about Peter was in his early days at Newcastle, if he ever lost the ball, which was very rarely, he took it as a personal insult and would go charging like he was in the schoolyard. That enthusiasm never left him. And Peter was what a superb player. I mean, he had a fantastic career. But what I liked about him was he was unselfish. It was always the team first, not him. He wasn't bothered about scoring goals. He was probably happier to make them, especially for his mate Gary Lineker, and an absolutely top class player.
Brilliant. Ali is a Liverpool fan. So many to choose from, but is Beardsley up there with the greatest for you?
Absolutely. He was brilliant in probably Liverpool's best ever team of the late 80s under Kenny Dalglish. And once he joined, I know Liverpool won the double in 86, but he joined the following summer. And that first season, first 2 years, playing next to John Barnes and John Aldridge, it's probably the best, attacking football that Liverpool have played. I know under Klopp, they've been brilliant. And, obviously with Salah, Mane and Firmino, everyone talks about that front three. Everyone talks about, Torres and Gerrard. But I think those three, Beardsley, Aldridge and Barnes, were just, perfect together and played. It's the best football that I've ever seen, like Liverpool play. And funnily enough, even when Dalglish came back and John Aldridge left, it wasn't exactly the same. It was best on that first season. As you just said, Beardsley was so unselfish, set up so many goals for John Aldridge, obviously Barnes as well, from the left wing. It was brilliant. What are my favourite players at the time?
You've got to say as well, when you look at that, it's a little known fact, Ali, to stay with you, is that Newcastle apparently rescued his career from Vancouver Whitecaps. But not many people know that he began and they said he wasn't good enough at Man United. Quite incredible that the talent, I mean, I know the talents escape, don't they? But that one is unbelievable.
Yeah, that was not a sorry to interrupt. Yeah, and it was a time that Man United were not very successful as well. You know, so I mean, to let a player of that quality escape, it's quite surprising.
Can you remember that, John, and being at Man U?
Yeah, well, I remember doing a story about him signing for Newcastle from Vancouver Whitecaps and doing a bit of background on him. And I did get the exclusive, but Alan Oliver, who you know very well, was the Eagle Chronicle. He did something no journalist should ever do. He knocked it down because he'd spoken to Newcastle, who denied it. But 3 days later, he actually did sign. So that's a lesson to all young journalists. Never knock somebody else's story, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. John, staying in the Northeast and legends, Big Al, the Lion of Gosforth. Let's just say kudos here to Terry Venables, though, by the way, because as we know, Shearer suffered a turbulent time at international level, but that never affected Venables, didn't it? He never, ever wavered with Alan.
I think he went 13 games without a goal, something like that. And, you know, he's obviously worried about his place, but Terry Venables said, no, you're still the man. And Euro 96 was fantastic. That was his heyday, wasn't it? Remember that game against Holland when England won 4-1? Shearer and Sheringham. They were on fire. And Alan, what a player. What a player. I mean, we saw him close up, obviously, at Blackburn and Newcastle, et cetera. And for England, he was, you mentioned it, Pete, he was a lion, absolute lion. And I wish we had him now. I mean, everybody goes on about Harry Kane. Harry Kane's a superb player, but I think I'd take Mr. Shearer first.
Ali, memories of Euro 96 for everyone around the world, not just in the UK at that time, but it was a special time for our age group as well, because if you thought about it, it was the summer of 96. The music was, it was Oasis, it was Blur, it was everything everyone was in. And then you throw in Euro 96 and Alan Shearer, that goal that he scored, it just seemed to lift everything off his shoulders, didn't it? And the nation.
Yeah, and I remember it, obviously, you know, like how excited, like how excited the whole country was. The atmosphere at Wembley, you know, like really came through. Shearer, but I mean, it was also, I just felt like, you know, this doesn't happen with, rarely happens with England, shall we say. You know, like so many players hit their peak form at the right time. You know, they hadn't played in the World Cup in 94. This whole generation, and like so many players, I remember like, Steve McManaman was really good in that tournament. Darren Anderton, Sheringham, Shearer, they all like played. They had like Gascoigne, you know, obviously Gaza was brilliant, you know, like.
And, Stevie Stone in there as well.
Steve Stone was there, you know, like, you know, I think, you know, Gary Neville, you know, was, you know, good overlapping fullback, you know, Stuart Pearce still there, you know, I think everybody was just, you know, really hit top form at the same time. And this is one of the things that England, you know, it rarely happens with England, you know, like remember in the 88 Euros, you know, they had an amazing squad and everyone, they were meant to be one of the favourites, partly because of the form of Peter Beardsley and John Barnes. And obviously we know what happened in that tournament. They lost all three games. They looked tired. Nobody was on form. Robson got injured. But in Euro 96, everyone hit top form at the same time. And it's probably the only time I've seen an England team do that.
Greatest time to be in England, that was for me. I hit peak form then as well, John, I can tell you that.
Are you going to say why, Pete?
No, I'm just enjoying football and life in general.
All right, okay.
What a time to be alive. But moving swiftly on, Ali, I'll stay with you. Back to today. Let's forget my memories. Back to the day. Kieran Trippier is the current Three Lions black and white representative. Possibly Nick Pope and him would both be hopeful of a ticket to Doha. Do you feel, Ali?
Yeah, I think Nick Pope should be England's number one. You know, and I don't like to keep going on about Pickford, but not his biggest fan. And I really like Nick Pope. When at the start of the season, we weren't sure. Or we were discussing at least, you know, will he be Newcastle's number one? And I felt like, you know, this is not a signing that, you know, will be eased in. This is not a signing where he'd have to, you know, fight for his place. This is someone coming in to be number one at the club. And he's been excellent. He was excellent at Burnley as well. I really think he's England's best goalkeeper. Should be number one.
As scouted by our very own John Richardson. That's going out as an exclusive, believe me.
Hey, wouldn't have minded 10% of the transfer.
Get on to Pope's agent and see what's happening. Listen, John, we can't let you go without reflecting on a legend from Wales as a player and a manager, Gary Speed. Listen, Rob Page and the Welsh squad, they've got to be thrilled that they're on their way to Qatar. I'm going to put it to you. Is it fair to say that Gary Speed created a Welsh blueprint and a pathway from his time as a Wales leader?
Yeah, without a doubt, because although he didn't live to see it, you know, be into fruition, he sort of brought a club mentality to Wales. You know, before he came, the sort of people were dodging, they were injured, they weren't joining up. Gary sort of, through his personality and through his dynamism, he sort of got them going again. And, you know, he got that club attitude. And that was carried on, to be fair, by Chris Coleman, although Chris had a nightmare first 12 months. I think they lost it against Serbia 6-1, which was one of their worst ever defeats. But Chris suddenly... He felt a little bit that I've got to do the way Gary did it. Well, you can't. You've got to put your own identity on it. And he finally did that. And in fact, I did an interview with Chris the other week. And he's loving what he's seeing now. He thinks that Robert Page is doing a fantastic job. Ryan Giggs, of course, missed out because of other circumstances. But in answer to your question, Pete, Gary started it. And I'm sure he's up there looking down on it and, delighted.
And you look at that now.
You got me, haven't
you? I know. When you look at it as a legacy, John, but you know, going back to what people did raise eyebrows, as they always do in football, and they think, wow, what a young player to be going into international coaching, and people were raising eyebrows. I tell you what, I wished, and I think a lot of people wished that he'd been English as well, because what he created, that blueprint that he set, was phenomenal. And as I said, they're still playing to that now.
Yeah, I remember when he was manager at Sheffield United. He used to come back to the Chester area where I live, and he'd go over the Snake Pass, and it'd take about 2 hours. About an hour of it would be spent talking to me on the phone. And it was always about, well, what do you think I should do and blah. I think, what are you asking me for? You know, you're the man. But he always was what I'm trying to say. He was so dedicated. You know, he lived and breathed it. I mean, obviously had his family at home, but on that journey, and if you ever gone along the Snake Pass, you're thinking, God, stop speaking to me and concentrate on the drive, because it's not the easiest drive. But he used to talk tactics, and he just knew that he wanted to succeed. There was nothing going to stop him succeeding, and the Wales job was man-made for him.
Just to add to that, and it's been bugging me for weeks now, and it came to me just before, while I was prepping for this podcast today with Gary Speed in mind. It's been bugging me who Bruno Guimaraes reminded me of on the pitch, and his style, his tenacity, his ability to pass. And there we have it. I can't pay him any bigger compliment than saying that Bruno reminds me of Gary Speed.
I've not thought it, but I'm thinking now. You're spot on. Yeah,
absolutely.
That tenacity. Also the skill, you know, skill on the ball. And also looking for the simple pass, and not playing, you know, Hollywood passes all the time. Just, we all remember that it wasn't the best start, was it, at Newcastle for Gary? You know, he got a bit of stick from the crowd, but suddenly, you know, what a player in the air as well. Have you ever seen, he's only, was he 5'11", something like that? But he saw, didn't he, in the air? He was fantastic. Just a superb player and an intelligent player.
And a great guy and an absolute joy to watch on the football field. Brilliant stuff as always. John, as always, fantastic to see you. Almost time for us to call it a day for another episode, but not before we have a last word, as always, with our Ali Khaled. Oh, and an answer to my question, please. We all know who the main one is. Obviously, it's Alan Shearer, but who's the second?
I think I got this. So I narrowed it down to two. Okay.
Okay.
So I was thinking, one possibility is Peter Beardsley, and obviously played for Newcastle before he joined Liverpool. The majority of his England caps would have been at Liverpool. But yep. I'm pretty certain he played after he left Everton in 1893. He would have played for England again. So he's one of the choices.
Okay.
And the other one is David Batty, who I think, well, definitely played in 98. Obviously missed the penalty in the World Cup. I'm not sure if he played in Euro 96. I don't recall him playing, but I'm guessing he was part of the setup. And obviously those were the years he was at Newcastle. I'm going to go for David Batty.
Do you know, two brilliant guesses, Ali. They were what I went with as well. So Shearer was 35. Peter Beardsley actually had 25. Then it was Rob Lee on 21. Batty was on 20. But the second and the runner-up was one that even, this is why I picked it as a quiz. I couldn't quite believe it. It was 32 caps whilst at Newcastle was Kieran Dyer.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I was way off. I mean,
you were in there. You had second. Yeah, which is a good effort.
Just in terms of Kieran Dyer, I actually had not considered him. Wow, that's a good question, Pete. Good question.
Yeah, so that deems me champion for this episode. I can sleep easily. All that remains for me is to thank today's guest, John Rickle Richardson. Brilliant, as always, to see you, John, and to hear the tales.
Thanks for inviting me.
Always a pleasure. Ali, we'll be seeing you again next week soon. And also, we'll have some news for our listeners as well about an exciting new possible show coming up to do with the World Cup. Because it is International Weekend this weekend, and we are looking forward to that coming up in November, December, in our neck of the woods as well. So, but more of that to follow. That's it from me, Geordie Pete, on Black and White with Arab News. How are the lads?